Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. It is a credit union, not a bank, which means it belongs to you. And we are now joined in studio once again, as she does every month, at least every month. Michelle is back with us.
Hello, Mark.
Hi, Michelle. I miss you, too. I haven't seen you in almost 2 months.
I know. It's been crazy.
Had your husband here last week, though.
Yeah, but that's not the same thing.
No, it's not the same thing. It's not the same thing. And you brought with you, we're very honored to have in our studios, Mildred Muhammad, domestic violence survivor who wrote this incredible book, Scared Silent, her memoir, Mildred Muhammad's story. And an honor to meet you, and welcome to our studios.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate you wanting to interview me for your show.
You know, it's reading your book, it was... First of all, it's a very accessible book because you write it in a way that any man or woman can kind of grab a hold of and just feel what you went through, that so many women go through in this country.
Well, it was based upon my journals. So the words that you are reading are the actual feelings that I had. That we just had to shape the words a little bit, but that is exactly how I felt. None of the words were substituted to give a different feel, because it was a really scary time.
Oh my God.
For me and for the whole world, actually, because the whole world was following this story. And if you were not living in this area, you had family members that were, which traumatized you also.
I thought about it on a couple levels. One was when you just described the part in your book where you talk about when John Muhammad took... They were both your children, but took your children. Mm-hmm. And you had to fight 18 months to find them and get them back. That's A story. But B, the hidden story when he became the Beltway sniper, killing all those people in the Baltimore, in the Washington area, that this was all part of coming to kill you.
Correct.
I mean, that, to have gone through both those things in your young life.
Yes, sir. That was that was difficult to accept as well, because, as you know, the profile that they gave us to look for was two Caucasians in a white box truck.
Exactly.
And let me just say this, Mildred, and we know this is no laughing matter, but be real clear, as comedians, we were banking on it being two white men. That was our hope, our goal, our aspiration, because we could then make an entire living off of these two white men.
Right.
So when nobody hurt the way you were hurt, but be real clear, comedians across the globe had their own interpretation of that profile. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, ma'am. It makes sense. Okay. It makes sense. You need the material.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes, ma'am.
So we weren't ready.
Well, neither was anybody else. Because when they knocked on my door.
They being the FBI or the police.
FBI and the CIA.
Right.
And they took me down for questioning. They asked me when was the last time I had seen him. Well, that was a year ago when I went to Tacoma for an emergency custody hearing.
Tacoma, Washington.
To get the children back. Right, Tacoma, mm-hmm. Washington. So coming from there, September of 2001, and then here it is October of 2002, we're all terrorized, scared to go outside, scared to pump the gas. School activities are being canceled. People are afraid to go to work, to pump gas. I mean, everyday activities were all of a sudden under a microscope, and no one was able to move or maneuver in the ways that they had become accustomed to. So when they brought me into the station and they asked me when was the last time I seen him, I told them a year ago. And they said, well, Ms. Muhammad, you know what? We're going to have to tell you. We're going to name your ex-husband as the sniper. I said, what? Because remember, two white men in a white box truck.
Right.
John is African-American. And so they say, well, Ms. Muhammad, didn't you know you were the target? And I had no idea I was the target. And I told him, I didn't know that. That's not what y'all said what we were supposed to be looking for.
That they knew that, you didn't know that. And as you told them that John Muhammad was a man of his word, if he said he's going to kill me, he meant that's what he
exactly.
needs to do.
But I didn't have physical scars to prove I was a victim.
What do you
mean
by that?
And therein lies... the issue, because 80% of victims and survivors of domestic violence do not have physical scars. I'm sure there's a victim or a survivor listening right now who's mm-hmm. trying to figure out, mm-hmm. why won't they listen to me? It is because you don't have scars to prove it. You don't have the enough evidence to take to the police for them to issue you a restraining order. So 80% of victims don't have scars. So what do we do?
So, and it's also, I think that your story is so poignant on a number of levels, because I think that when, and there are millions of women who suffer this every year, millions of women in this country, mm-hmm. And men too, by the way, but mostly women, but millions.
And it's interesting that you said millions of women, because a statistic brought out by Professor Starks of Rutgers University stated that in 2010, 1 million men were arrested for domestic violence, and not one of them served any time.
Not one served time, Mildred?
Not one.
And he substantiated these numbers?
Yes, ma'am. And he's sending me the report so that I can have it. But that was a statistic he put out in New Mexico at a conference. Mm. It's in his book, Coercive of Control.
And the thing that's interesting, one million. The thing that's interesting to me about that number and about this concept, and it's about this conversation, is that there's so much, you know, shame.
It is
around being on either side of it, and in some cases, people would say there's more shame being on the side of the one being abused.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know. You know, we're having this conversation tomorrow, Mildred. So we do want to, you know, make sure that we save some content for those who will come.
They will still come, Michelle.
They're going to come.
We have a lot of content.
Trust me. I know you have enough. You got enough content for us to be there for 3 hours. In fact, we're going to do the screenplay. I'm going to act out some of the scenes on stage. And but the truth of the matter is there is a shame. And why do you think there is shame, Mildred, around that?
Because, come on, you could have a physical ailment of any kind, and people will flock to your house to take care of you, mm-hmm. to cook for you and everything. Domestic violence is a social dis-ease. So that is something we are not willing to step into. What happens in your house, mm-hmm. happens in your house.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And back in my day, you don't tell what happened in your house. That's family business.
Mm.
So still today, some people hold that type of standard, and they don't let you know what's going on in their home.
Mm-hmm.
So the very person you're sitting next to, who you work with, could possibly be a victim of domestic violence. And I believe it's also because we all want our friends and our colleagues to look at us favorably. If I tell you I'm a victim of domestic violence, you will look at me differently. You will no longer have that faith or confidence in me like you had before. Now you're talking about me and whispering behind my back.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're no longer willing to put yourself out for me like you did before. The very people that we have to protect us are also the ones that have domestic violence going on in their community as well. Military, law enforcement, FBI. And they don't report it because, number one, they will lose their security clearance. And if you lose your security clearance, you can't work. So if I am a supervisor and you find out I'm a victim, you will find a way to take away my clearance, because if I can't manage my home, then how can I manage other people? See, it all coincides together. So I'm not going to tell you I'm a victim of domestic violence. Mm-hmm. I'll just keep it to myself and work it out.
And it's interesting, Mark, because you don't hear that side of it, that there's it's a house of cards, so to speak. It's like you flick that one card and everything comes tumbling mm-hmm. down. And so it becomes, you know, that silent, you know, for lack of better words in the front of my mind, that silent killer.
Right, silent crisis.
We have to take a short break. When I come back and jump right back into this, a bunch of thoughts in my head we want to talk about tomorrow night, so you can meet both Mildred Muhammad and Michelle tomorrow night here at Morgan State University. We'll tell you about that when we come back from this break. Right now we have to take a very brief break to talk about WEAA and your support for WEAA and these wonderful books you can get for that support. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and as usual, Michelle is in the house. We love her when she's here. And, of course, 2011 OSI Fellow, founder of the Gold Diggers Project, comedian, actress extraordinaire, author, spirited lecturer.
Wife.
Mother.
Mother of three who are not here. Bless his name.
They were here last week.
Yes, they were here last week.
They all came up and jumped all over me and said hello.
I love those children.
And we are honored that Michelle came here tonight with Mildred Muhammad, who has written this very powerful, wonderful, important book.
Absolutely.
Called Scared Silent, The Mildred Muhammad Story and Memoir. One of the things I thought about in looking at this book, before I do that, Michelle, tell folks about tomorrow night. You can't throw ticket price out there.
We're not going to throw
ticket
price
out. But tell them about tomorrow night.
And the beautiful part is it's not even a ticket that you even have to be worried about
in
terms of
pricing. No, it's less than going to the movies.
Yes, it's much less than going to the movies.
But more important.
Very much so. But tomorrow night, the Stone Foundation, the Urban Leadership Institute, and Sigma Alpha Iota present a conversation with Mildred Muhammad, author of Scared Silent and ex-wife of the D.C. Sniper. I will be moderating that conversation, which is going to be a very exciting night. Mildred and I keep bumping into each other at all kinds of conferences, so we home girls now.
That's right.
But tomorrow night here at Morgan State University from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Student Center Ballroom, we would love for you guys to come out and support those of you all who are advocates, those of you all who are social activists, those of you all who care about this story and who also want to be a part of the solution, keeping women and men safe who are suffering from domestic violence and have experienced domestic violence. Mildred's just going to share her story, and it's a very wonderful,
very powerful story.
All of this, there are some wonderful things that have come out of this experience, believe it or not. Mildred understands the beauty of truth and life and being able to share her story. So we want you guys to come out tomorrow night, 6 to 9 p.m. at the Student Center Ballroom here at Morgan State University. And we just want to have this great conversation with Mildred Muhammad. And we have a special guest tomorrow night. There's going to be a special session with Mildred's son, John Williams Jr., for youth ages 11 through 17. And so you'll get to hear the experience from John's perspective. And he's going to be with us tomorrow night, so I'm excited about that. And John, y'all, ladies, y'all won't come out. That's all I'm going to say. Y'all won't come out to see John Williams Jr. tomorrow night.
For the content.
For the content, yes, for the content. For the content. That's
410-319-8888. But, Mildred, one of the things that so many things struck me about this story, let me try to hit a couple of them that I think that when you led the story up to the point that John Muhammad ran off with your children. Mm-hmm. And that phone call, you know, we're trying to see where they were, realizing that they weren't coming back and that he was stealing the kids. Two things: what happens to lots of people who naturally in the course of life fall in love. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
And you don't expect these things to be.
No, you don't.
And then you're just in it.
You're just in it. And you don't find out that there's a custody issue until you file the separation papers. Because while you're married and everything is good, there's no such thing as who has custody of the children because it is considered a joint custody and a good faith relationship between the parents that we will do good by our children. I call it the window of opportunity between the separation and going to court to find out who has custody. Mm-hmm. Because it is within that window that many children are kidnapped from the other parent. Because once you go to court, then they decide who gets the children. Well, it was that window of opportunity that he took them on a weekend visitation. And that's what happens. And he didn't bring them back.
And your kids were missing for 18 months.
And he emptied the bank accounts. 18 months. Yes. I cannot describe the pain that it takes for you to lay your head to a pillow every night and not know where your three children are. And I have three. My son, John, is 21 now, but my daughters, Selena and Taliba, are 19 and 18.
And what you describe, I remember in the book about when they first saw you and came running up to you. In the book. That
right.
was a very kind of, it was a very tearful moment for me to read
right.
that piece of the book. But it was also that conversation you had to have with them when they said, no, but Daddy was looking for you.
Right, when
right?
we were in the car. And
right.
it was like, well, Mommy, Daddy was looking for you. I was like, okay, so why would he change your name if he was looking for me? and they just sat back. They looked at each other first, and they just sat back, because that's when they began to realize something wasn't right.
I mean, the trauma the children went through, not just you, but the trauma that children go through is the other piece of the story of any kind of domestic violence.
Right, but I had to take control of that situation. I tried to get them counseling. Unfortunately, we were running across an ethical counselor, so I went to the library and I got a book on counseling and learned how to counsel me and my children myself. They couldn't go to the parties. They couldn't do the things the other children did. I told them later that, you know, I'm your mother first and your friend second, and you can get upset with me all you want, but you're going to do what I tell you to do, because this is a serious issue, and I can't have you out there and the media starts to report that the D.C. sniper children did A, B, C, and D. That's not going to happen.
So, Mildred, I don't even think people understand the brevity of what she just said. Maybe they get it, maybe they don't, Mark. But coming from a former psychologist in training, you know, I was training to become a school psychologist, the 3 years of my doctorate work in school psychology, and hearing Mildred say she went to get counseling and the counselor was unethical.
Mm-hmm.
Mildred, I know you probably can't say, we certainly don't want you to name names, but tell me what you mean when you say that.
Because one of them wanted my son John to contact Lee Malvo to get his take on what has happened, so that he could help him to write a book.
We're talking about Lee Malvo was the young man who was
right.
Kind of seduced by John Muhammad to help him kill these people. And
the counselor wanted John
right.
to get in touch
told
with Lee
that.
So that they could write a book from with Lee's testimonial about what had happened.
So he could make money
to give to us, because we didn't have any money. So he was just trying to help us out. That's the best way he thought would be to help us, was to for John to do that. And
to
I told
exploit.
Him, right. I said, you know, John can't even write a sentence without crying. I mean, that's how traumatized he was.
Absolutely.
And so I just took him out. And then there were other counselors that my children, they would say, well, Mommy, they really don't want to help us. They just want to know about Dad. They're really not helping us at all. And so, you know, that was it. I went to that library, Introduction to Counseling,
and
I applied it for myself and for my children. Because a counselor told me, well, Ms. Muhammad, we really can't help you, because we go based on a case study. There's no case that we can study that we can apply for you to get healing. So, in essence, I'm going to be your guinea pig for you to figure this out, and I'm going to be damaged or not in the process.
But there are reputable counselors. I said the ones that I met. Yeah, the ones that you met. Yeah,
right.
I'm making it clear that there are some wonderful counselors.
It's just unfortunate that I didn't get to meet
any
of them.
And I keep telling people, counselors, therapy and counseling, it's like trying on shoes. And people don't get this. Just because they have the shingle, just because they have the license, does not mean it's the counselor or therapist for you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You've got to try on therapists and counselors like you try on shoes and jeans. Sometimes you gain a little weight, you can't fit those jeans.
Right.
Sometimes your feet swell up because you ate too much salt, you can't wear those shoes.
Right.
You've got to find a counselor that fits for you. And it may be some what they would call non-traditional types, you know, who may be a better fit. You know, the ones who have the counseling degrees and have the license, but they've taken on another aspect of how to get through the healing process. And I think sometimes as people of color, we get a little limited on how we want the healing process to take place. It
right.
has to look like a certain construct. And if it don't look like that, if somebody say, I want to teach you some deep breathing, you're like, well, I already know how to breathe. What you want me to breathe for? And we just can't step outside of the construct that there's other ways to get to the source of our pain and then unlearn that. And thus the healing comes forward. So I totally get what you're saying, Mildred. And I get what Mark's saying. There are reputable counselors out there
right.
who have all kinds of they don't need your one case study. They understand the human mind. They understand the dynamic, and they understand trauma. And so they work from that template and they do the best they can. It's unfortunate, Mildred, that you didn't meet any of those folks.
I didn't meet any of them, so I went to the library.
I know that's
library
right.
is a good resource. You know,
it is.
They have many, many books.
Absolutely.
And I went there.
Well, thank God you ain't Google how to counsel.
No.
Because y'all might end up with a whole nother story.
So we're going to take a very quick break and come back. And we're going to come back to Mildred Muhammad. Michelle is in the house. The book is Scared Silent, The Mildred Muhammad Story, a memoir. And we'll come back to some of the heart of the book, because it's a very powerful book that really... amazing. I think that we need to hear more about this book, about how it began and where she is now, and also how you can meet her tomorrow night. So don't go away. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. Get Fit Families, a town hall meeting on childhood obesity, Thursday, April 28th, 7 to 9 p.m. in the Wheeler Auditorium. No, I'm sorry. This is the wrong one. We'll have to get the right announcement back. That was the one we did in April. We had another one coming up in November. When we get that right, we'll get it back. Right now, we're here with Michelle, 2011 OSI Fellow, founder of the Gold Diggers Project, comedian and actress. Incredible activist and powerful woman who brought with her today Mildred D. Muhammad, the ex-wife of John Muhammad, the Beltway sniper, domestic violence survivor, author of this incredible book, Scared Silent, the Mildred Muhammad Story, a memoir. They will both be here at Morgan State University tomorrow night at 6 p.m. from 6 to 9. Michelle talking with Mildred Muhammad on stage.
Yes.
At the student center that you do not want to miss.
And a special session with John Williams Jr., who'll be addressing the 11 through 17-year-olds. We know that there are a group of children out here and tons, millions of children who've experienced the firsthand results of domestic violence. And John graciously decided to be with us tomorrow night. We're so grateful that he's going to be here to share and also impart his own experience to these to this group of distinguished young kids. So we would love for you guys to bring your children out and realize that you are not alone.
No, you're not.
You are not alone, and there is no shame.
There is no shame.
There is no shame.
And even if you feel shame, look it up. Look up the word shame to get an understanding of what it is. When you understand what it is you're dealing with, then you're better to move forward from it. But as long as you don't know what it means, then you remain stagnant.
When you reflect back, Mildred Muhammad, on your own life, and think about what you're talking about with especially other women, mm-hmm. Are there? You think about, you know, we can always, all of us can say, oh, well, we'd have done this, we would have done that. Mm-hmm. But when you see the moment which you may have understood something was going on, how you make other women and other people understand where the breaking point is coming and how you can intervene for yourself and your family.
Well, the first thing you have to do is stop reacting and start acting. That's how you regain your own power. Because as long as your abuser can keep you off balance, you can't think. The interesting thing is the abuser, man or woman, uses what they know about you to keep you off balance. It's unfortunate that when we're victims, we don't think to use what we know about the abuser to stay two steps ahead of him or her. Mm-hmm. And that's where we get stuck, because we're stuck in, oh, well, he or she loves me. Why would they do something like this? They do this because they don't love you. And swallowing the pill of a person that you have been with for so many years, that pill that says he or she does not love you, that was the hardest pill for me to swallow. Yeah. But once I swallowed that pill, I was done.
And also, I mean, as part of your story is also kind of compelling, was the story about both of you being part of the Muslim faith mm-hmm. in this happening.
But it's very important to understand that domestic violence does not have a religion.
No, it has no religion.
Because when you start to designate a certain religion, then people start to feel mm-hmm. that, well, that doesn't happen to us, it happens to them. Mm-hmm. Domestic violence doesn't have a religion. It doesn't have a financial or an educational status. It does not have a culture, a race, or a creed. It could happen to men, women, children, and the elderly. So don't think for one moment that you cannot be a victim. It is but by a decision that you are not. So we need to be very careful how we categorize domestic violence, and we not leave anybody out, because it can happen to any of us.
And I'm glad you said that, Mildred, because there are all kinds of stigmas and ideas about who suffers more and who's more likely to suffer or be in a situation of domestic violence, and you're here telling us that is not the case.
That is not the case.
Right.
And it's important that you understand the difference, because we hear domestic violence and we hear domestic abuse, mm-hmm. and sometimes we get confused. Domestic violence is when there is a physical assault,
mm-hmm.
but all of the other assaults have taken place as well. Physical domestic abuse, which I suffered, is verbal, mental, psychological, stalking. All of these abuses, law enforcement do not come out for. It is only when there is a physical assault that they will come out.
Well, this is such an important piece of this. This is why I think your book is important, because there's so many people are verbally abused.
Yes, they are.
And filled with fear. Mm-hmm. To act, because mm-hmm. they either because they're frightened of what could happen physically, what could happen to their children, and they take this psychological damage, the psychological control.
Because we don't seem to, you know, the statistic says that every 9 to 15 seconds a woman is abused. Well, what I'm trying to do as a national spokesperson for domestic violence is to try to get society to shift their thinking from that 9 to 15 seconds to the number one,
mm-hmm.
because number one begins with a verbal assault. When you can understand that,
how do you describe for people the difference? Because here's what some people do: the difference between a argument between a man and a woman who live together,
mm-hmm.
or married, and the assault.
Okay, we all have boundaries of how far a person can go in an argument. It is when that person crosses your personal boundary, because what's verbal abuse to me may not be verbal abuse to you. So you have to have your threshold of pain that you're willing to say, you know what, you can't do that to me. You're not going to say that to me. And that is when it becomes a verbal assault. Everybody is different. Some people are raised in an abusive home, so their threshold of pain is higher, whereas other people are not, and their threshold of pain is lower. You have to know who you are, and you have to know what you will and will not accept from the person that you have in your life. That is when you know.
You know, but Mildred, that's so interesting that you say that, because do you know, just by virtue of you saying that, I don't think people even have had that distinction put in front of them,
mm-hmm.
that domestic abuse is based on your own level or your own threshold of pain, because oftentimes it is learned behavior. People have, this is all they know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm an observer of people because it helps in my stand-up, right? And I'll see people walking down the street and hear them verbally abusing one another.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to the point where you can see the posture of the person change, the one that's being abused by the abuser. You can see their countenance change. You can see, you know, and eventually you can see how it has changed that person.
Mm-hmm.
But no one has ever identified that as abuse. They'll say, well, you know, that's just how Leroy is. You know, he ignorant. You know, No. You have to totally rewind that, mm-hmm. and deconstruct. In other words, take it apart bit by bit,
mm-hmm.
and show, here is where it is pain. Here is where this is abusive. Here is where this is not good or normal behavior.
Right.
And then say, whenever you feel that, whenever you see that, whenever you hear that, you have been experiencing domestic abuse. It's real, and it has a real effect. Is that
exactly
right?
That is true. And unfortunately, when we are in relationships, you cannot make a clear decision on what is before you because your emotions are attached. And when your emotions are attached, now you have a distorted view of what you're looking at with the other person. And when they give you the shock factor of calling you a B or calling you a W, I know some people spell that
with an H,
but it starts with a W.
It's a W, but it's also a gardening material.
Well, if it's spelled with the H, it's a gardening material. If it starts with a W, then you're calling an offensive name.
Absolutely.
And no one should allow anyone to call you other than what God says that you are, because in the book it says that God has created you to be a masterpiece. Mm. So don't allow anyone who did not create you to make you feel less than what God says you are.
Mm-hmm. That's a very powerful statement that for us to close on for just a moment and come right back to this conversation on our way. To talk to you about WEA, I want to remind you that a tradition continues with the second annual WEAA Gospel Grace Benefit Concert featuring the legendary Lady Tremaine Hawkins.
Oh, wow.
Also performing Ernest Pugh, Wilmington Chester Mass Choir, and the Morgan State University Choir, Sunday, October 30th, 6 p.m. at the Murphy Fine Arts Auditorium. Ticket information at Murphy's Box Office, Ticketmaster.com, Ticketmaster Outlets, or 410-547-SEAT. Presented by the MBA program here at Morgan State University and public radio to be EAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Stay with us. Welcome back. I am graced in the studio today to have Milja Muhammad with us. Her book, Scared Silent, the Milja Muhammad story, a memoir. She will be appearing tomorrow night here at Morgan State University at 6 p.m. in the Student Center with the lovely, talented, brilliant Michelle, who will be doing the interview in a very informal setting for all of you to enjoy. John Muhammad will be talking to the younger
John people. Williams Jr.
What did I say?
John Williams
I'm sorry, John Williams Jr., excuse me. Mm-hmm. We'll be talking to the young people in the audience. And so going back to where we left off, I think that this delineation between abuse and violence is a really critical one.
Yes, it is.
Because it can be as, if not more terrorizing than just the physical violence itself.
It can be. And sometimes we don't know how to turn off the tape recorder in our heads when we have been emotionally beaten down to feel like we're not worth anything. But that's a gradual process. The person that you're meeting is not going to come right off the bat and call you a B. That's a gradual thing. But once they call you that, now you're emotionally locked in, and it's difficult for you to leave, especially when children are involved.
Right. It's really hard when you have little ones involved. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also one of those things that a man or woman can do the abusing.
Yes.
That's clear.
That's clear.
Because when you're psychologically tormented, you don't have to be physically threatened all the time.
Well, a man can take a physical hit, but he can't take an emotional one.
Right. Right. That, I think the male species is emotionally much weaker in many ways, mm-hmm. without
right.
a doubt.
And so that's where everything starts to fall apart, because domestic violence is not a woman's issue. It is a man's issue.
Right.
It is man's victimization of the woman because of his inability to handle his frustrations and disappointments. Once he's able to handle those in a very strategic and healthy way, then that is when we can begin the process or break down the cycle of abuse. But we have to start with verbal. It's not going to start with physical.
Right.
So we have to learn to talk to and not talk at each other.
That's really important.
And I think that it's interesting to also note, Mildred, the work that you've been doing with wives of servicemen and women, wives of servicemen and husbands of servicewomen who have experienced this kind of trauma, this kind of abuse. Talk just a little bit about what you've experienced being the wife. I don't know if people understood being the ex-wife, but people understood that John was a serviceman.
Yes, he was, and he was in Desert Storm. And when he came back from Desert Storm, he was diagnosed with PTSD. And unfortunately, at that time, they didn't have all of the resources available to help soldiers with that ailment. And now there are soldiers coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan who are experiencing that same type of trauma. And the military has begun to address the issue. However, the domestic violence in the military community is rising, and is rising very fast. But they are taking the necessary steps to do the work to help. But just like any other social disease, I mean, if you don't catch it when it's a trinkle, now that it's exploded, you just don't know what to do. There are so many issues.
Yeah.
You don't know which one to work with, because now you have children that are traumatized. You have the wives and the husbands that are traumatized. And what I suggest is that they try to create a safe zone for the men coming from a war zone to be with the families that are still here, so they can create a harmony. because the soldier feels like he's left out.
Right.
He doesn't know how to fit in anymore. And then he has all of this other things that he's bringing back from a war zone that he has to try to fit into regular society. That's a lot of stress. That's a lot of pain. So if I don't have anybody to address my pain to, then it's got to come right. out in other ways. And it's not going to be productive ways. It's going to be negative ways, but it's going to bring the attention I need for you to understand I need
hurting.
Help.
I'm hurting.
As I hear you speak, one of the things I think about is that all you've been through, with the terror you lived through, and what you're trying to teach and talk to the public about now, is that there are a lot of traumatized people in this world.
Yes.
I mean, we were talking about this the other day, that with actually your husband's partner, with David Miller. Mm-hmm. We were having breakfast the other morning and talking about...
Business partner, folks.
So we were talking about the millions of kids living in poverty mm-hmm. in the inner cities of America who are traumatized, who mm-hmm. suffer from the same thing as post-traumatic stress, mm-hmm. the trauma of their lives, of poverty and violence in their communities.
That is correct.
So what you're talking about is being able to intervene in these things early.
Mm-hmm.
Let's intervene in this so we can cut down and ameliorate these
right.
effects on people's lives that are growing
right.
up.
Right, but we don't have that kind of time. Budgets are being cut
right.
for social issues. Mm-hmm. And if the money is, an idea without money goes nowhere. So we got to put the money out there so that we can help the people that need the help. And sometimes we forget about the children because we think, well, they're resilient,
right,
they're strong, right. they can bounce
say,
back.
Exactly. Yeah,
they
all
only
we say.
Can bounce back with a good, secure, and safe support system. That's it. They can't do it on their own. They're children. They don't know how to do it. So it is our responsibility to step in and say, I can show you the way. I can help you through this trauma. Let's deal with this together. You are not alone. I'm here for you. It is only then, and the child knows that, because children can read us. They know when we're real
right.
and when we're not.
Right.
And if you're not real, they're not going to attach to you in order for you to help them, and they're just going to stay out there where they are because they feel that what they're doing is better for them.
And you've done it with your own children.
Yes, I have. I had to because now my son, all of my children are in college. My son, John, is in computer information systems. My daughters, Selena and Taliba.
These are your children, right, ma'am?
These are my children.
I just want to make sure.
Lord help
make sure
me
you
if
ain't
she don't
them.
Hear this, then I did not pronounce her name correctly.
Say it, Mildred. Say it right.
Selena and Taliba. Both sing opera in 8 different languages.
Go ahead.
And they both attend college in Ohio.
This has just been a real pleasure and honor to have you in the studio. I've been looking forward to this.
Thank you.
Be here. That's why when we thought you were going to make it next week, I said, no, I don't want to see Mildred Mama on the phone. I want her here in the studio. We'll wait till next week.
Yes, sir.
And we were so excited about tomorrow night, Mark. I'm so
tomorrow
excited.
Night.
Tomorrow night here at Morgan State University, we're going to have a conversation with Mildred Muhammad. This was just the tip of the iceberg. But tomorrow night from 6 to 9 at the Student Center, sponsored by the Stone Foundation, Urban Leadership Institute, and the amazing folks of Sigma Iota. And we are so excited that she's going to be with us. So also her son, John Williams Jr., will be talking to 11 to 17 years old. So please come out tomorrow night, and we look forward to being with you guys tomorrow night to share more insight.
Michelle, thank you. Good to see
thank you,
love.
Mark. Always good to be always here. And keep
and
calling,
Muhammad,
folks.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
410-319-8888. Make your pledge now. You can walk away with Mildred Muhammad's book signed and also Michelle's book. 410-319-8888. On the way out of here, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Mortgage Program, a community lending initiative of the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. You can own a house in Baltimore. 1-800-638-7781. And the Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Cricket Harrison. We're engineered by Akisa Gunn. Our intern today is Mike Norris from Baltimore City College. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, and find out information about our guests and their work, just log on to steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Keep those phones ringing at 410-319-8888. And take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.